Welcome to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. I'm a homeschool father of five. We raise our kids out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado during the decline of the Christian West. And here we are on the very frontier of the Christian West during the dying of a old Western Christian civilization. And we are chronicling these things and bringing back a biblical worldview foundation, always trying to restore the concrete. The biblical worldview foundations are essential, and we lose the foundations, and all we have are the external accoutrements. Friends, you're not going to look at much of a salvage of the faith through the generations. And our desire is to see that we pass on the faith from one generation to the next. This is our heart cry. This is our prayer. And this is the vision for our ministry. Steve Vaughn in studio with me today, and a man who resonates with this, and he's got six children, and hopes and prays that God would, by his grace, pass that faith on to his children, and I'm guessing your grandchildren too someday.
Yeah. And basically what this means is that you just can't dance through life. You have to.
That's right.
You have to be active.
Yep, exactly.
In all that you do every day.
Active, intentional, and biblical with what you're doing. And that's what we intend to do on this radio program. We come back to the cultural issue again and again because popular culture has so much influence upon our children and our young people in our churches. My wife is commenting on this, that the young people tend to change dramatically when they hit 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 years of age. And she asked me, and a change was sometimes towards the worse, and she asked me, what is it that they're getting? And I think my answer was pop culture tends to seep in under the corners and around the edges. And as long as we are aware of this, we're properly discerning it, I think as Christian families, we can properly engage this thing. We are supposed to be engaging the ideas, the imaginations, and every high thing that exalts itself above the knowledge of God in Christ and bring these imaginations down and address these things by a biblical perspective. And so we address the popular culture from time to time from a biblical perspective. So today I'd like to look at television. I don't typically watch television, but I picked up a couple of YouTube examples of this program that's been very, very popular with Christians. Indeed, there have been a number of Christians this season involved directly with this television program. At one point, the television program was the third or fourth or fifth most popular on television in any given season. There's been 13 years of this, 26 seasons of the television program Dancing with the Stars. And have you heard of it, Steve?
I've heard of it. I don't think I've ever watched an episode.
Yeah, I haven't either, except for a couple of YouTubes I picked up just before we came on air today. And the reason why we're addressing this is because of the intense popularity of this program with a Christian audience. In fact, it appears to be so popular with a Christian audience that the top five contestants this season apparently were Christian, or at least professing Christians. And so I was curious. You know, I've seen this pop up in the news a number of times over the last 3 to 4 weeks. In fact, this year, this season, the winner, apparently it's a contest, dancing contest, and the winner this year was a Christian, or a professing Christian, and then you have examples of Mr. T dancing to Amazing Grace, with a gospel chorus in the background. I caught that one on YouTube, and Simone Biles, one of the dancers, danced with her partner to Chris Tomlin's Good Good Father. Now, you know Chris Tomlin. He's a famous Christian songwriter of our day. And so, of course, I'm curious. I'm thinking, well, what is this? You know, so many Christians involved. And I immediately read a review on PluggedIn.com. I go to PluggedIn.com sometimes when I want to kind of get a little bit of a introduction to some popular cultural program on television or the movies. And read a review on Focus on the Family's Plugged In from Paul Assay, who does most of the reviews, I think, for Plugged In. And he called the program sexually charged. And quote, here it is, I have a hard time imagining that folks in the 1940s, Havana, would not have raised an eyebrow at all the clothes-shedding, leg-grabbing, floor-crawling maneuvers on this program, Dancing with the Stars.
Okay, wow.
You get the description. Paul Assay knows how to describe things.
Yes, he does.
And so, you know, this got me to think. And so we're going to talk about how much Christians should be involved in all of this sexually charged, clothes-shedding, leg-grabbing, and floor-crawling maneuvers. Okay, that's next on the Generations Radio Broadcast. Folks, under Obamacare, the average family health care premiums now have exceeded $18,000, and more premium increases averaging 25% are expected for next year in 39 states. And remember, over 1,000 Obamacare plans cover abortion, and that's most of them. Five states offer no abortion-free plans at all. And you know that all Obamacare plans contain the contraceptive abortifacient mandate. So what do Christians do? Well, I'll tell you what we have done. My family has gone with the Samaritan Medical Sharing Ministry since 1999. Over 17 years, we have shared our medical needs with brothers and sisters in Christ, and they have shared theirs with us. And the cost? Well, it's about one-third of what the average family pays under Obamacare, and Samaritan Ministries does not support the killing of unborn children. Our family has saved over $200,000 in insurance premiums over the last 17 years, and we have helped literally hundreds of Christian brothers and sisters with their medical needs. We write checks every month to different families who have needs to cover. How cool is that? On top of all of that, we can support the lives of unborn children while the powerful systems in Washington are doing just the opposite. I want to encourage you to check out Samaritan Ministries as an option for your family. Imagine healthcare sharing in a Christian way, protecting life as Christians do at one-third the cost. Just check it out at SamaritanMinistries.org and mention Kevin Swanson when you sign up, and we'll send you a free copy of my new book, Family Life. That's SamaritanMinistries.org. And we're back on the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your Steve Vaughn, also in studio with me. And we're taking a look at Dancing with the Stars on its 13th year, 26th season. Top five contestants this season were Christians, and the winner was a Christian. And then we caught examples of Simone Biles dancing to Chris Tomlin's Good Good Father this year. And Jenny Finch Daigle also, another Christian, or professing Christian, refused to dance to a vulgar bisexual anthem. Evidently, Jenny Finch Daigle's a professional softball player, and she made a call to the show producers during last week's episode of the competition. This is from Christian Post. And she said she was refusing to dance to a risque Janelle Monáe song because she wanted to stay true to the Christian values. Finch Daigle maintained that she couldn't dance to the song Make Me Feel, which has vulgar lyrics and sexual references and is being called the bisexual anthem. So she decided that she'd rather dance to another selection by Daphne Willis called Do It Like This.
Okay.
Yeah. So she replaced the bisexual fornicating song with, well,
just
do it like this.
Yeah.
Making up your own rules, do what you feel, do what you want to do, what you want to do, what do you want, do what you want to do. What do you want? Do what you want to do. So that's pretty much the lyrics. There's not a whole lot to the lyrics of modern music. I don't know, Steve, if you've been in connection with some of the modern pop music these days.
I try not to.
but as I see it, it's a trading the bisexual fornicating song for sort of a heterosexual something or other. Anyway, that's the way it went. She said, and this is her quote, "I want to glorify God out there, and this bisexual anthem was not a great choice for me to do that." So that's that was her take on it. Well, let's take a look at this issue again. Friends, I mean, be discerning, be discerning, be discerning. Ask the right questions. Consider the right biblical principles. Don't just take whatever every Christian is doing out there and say, this must be wonderful. Don't just receive everything the world is handing to you on a silver platter and saying, well, it's got to be good if it's approved of by the vast majority of television watchers in America. It must be good. If it's popular, it must be the way to heaven. Please don't consider that to be your rule of thumb for what is right and what is wrong, what is true and what is not true. Well, let's go back to this Focus on the Family review for just a moment. Steve, let's study this for a second. Does Paul say have, you know, any wisdom to share with us when he says, I have a hard time imagining that folks in 1940s Havana would not raise an eyebrow at all the clothes-shedding, leg-grabbing, floor-crawling maneuvers. Now, is that fair? Is it fair to compare the looseness of the day to the strictness of 1940s Havana 70 years ago. You know, it's a little bit like saying I have a hard time seeing Dwight L. Moody dancing with a woman without a shirt on while the woman has shed her clothes and he's grabbing her leg and so on and so forth. Or this season it was the athletes. Okay, they chose a number of Christian athletes, and so you know I have a hard time seeing Eric Little. Remember Eric Little, the yes. Olympian who would not run on Sunday because it was the Sabbath. Do you remember
yes.
that?
Yes.
He was a missionary to China, I believe. Remember him? Okay, I have a hard time seeing Eric Little, the Olympian, running or dancing with a woman without a shirt on while the woman is shedding her clothes and he's grabbing her leg. You know, that's the question that Paul is safe from Focused on the Family is offering to us. He's saying, does the historical record of how Christians have done things in the past or how even society did things in 1940s Havana, does yeah. that have any wisdom for our present day?
I think that at least taking a look at what you're doing and why you're doing things is really the principle of it all.
Mm-hmm.
That every generation and every era has its sinfulness.
Positives and negatives.
And negatives,
both.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, yeah, if we take a look at a stricter era, and I think you take a look at all of what was going on and say, okay, so if the values of things were going on at that time that we liked, then maybe go back and take a look at why were mm-hmm. they happening.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be a good idea to, yeah, I think we can compare them and to take a look and see why is it different today than it was back in the 1940s.
And I think there's also the principle of the frogs in the slowly boiling water, where it might be helpful not to compare this year with last year. That is, you know, 211 degrees with 210 degrees. But perhaps if you compare 211 degrees to 140 degrees some 75 years ago, did you follow me there?
Yeah.
If you compare what's going on right now to what was going on 75 years ago, the frogs may have a better sense for what's happening to them. I think that's the philosophy that Paul is using, or Paul say is using, not the Apostle Paul, but the Paul from Focus on the Family is using with this review.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we become acclimated to a cultural norm. And, you know, back then, only 3% of kids were born outside of wedlock. Back in the 1940s, okay, only 3% of kids were born outside of wedlock. Now 59% of kids are born outside of wedlock. And we as Christians can sometimes warm up to this risque culture. We get this impression, okay, that we need to watch the same television programs as a fornicating culture likes to watch. We need to dress the same way as a fornicating culture likes to dress. And it is, but it's important for us to step back and say, okay, what is this culture doing? What is this culture all about? What is this culture expressing in the things that it's expressing? There's also the subtle message, Steve, that if it's art, it's a fine. You know,
yeah.
Have you heard this before? You know,
if
it's art, if somebody has called it art, then it's good. It's going to be good. It's got to be good.
Yeah.
If it's art, if it's nude art. Right? Nudes. You know, the people actually paint nudes. You've seen these.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you probably have, right?
Yeah. At the state fair, we walked in and walked right back out.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You know, this has been years ago, mm-hmm. but they had them spread out. And so you'd be walking along with your kids and you'd look up and it's like, oh, you turn around and walk out because that was a nude. And right. but they said, you know, we actually
good
wrote
because it's art. That's what I say. It's good because it's art.
So we wrote to them and said, you know, could you at least put them all in one room and close it off?
Mm-hmm.
And we never got a response as far as I know. But yeah, just because you say it's art doesn't then give you the right to do whatever you want.
Well, I think that's the message that has been conveyed to us is that whatever is done in the name of art, if it's dancing, it's good. If it's artistic dancing, it's going to be good. Doesn't matter if the dancing is in the nude, as long as it's called art or culture by the avant-garde, then it's acceptable. I think the question, though, Steve, is who gets to call it art? You follow me?
Yeah.
I mean, let's push that question back. Somebody called it art, but who was it that called it art? Could it be men with perverted minds, for example? Could the avant-garde have been unconverted, unregenerate men and women?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah.
See, I think, again, Christians need to be a little bit more discerning sometimes. If unbelieving homosexual producers, directors, artists are calling something art, then do we have to respect it as art? Even when it may be licentious, immodest, lascivious. Ephesians 4, verses 17 through 20 reminds us that we're not to walk as other Gentiles walk in the vanity of their mind. That is, the Gentiles, those that aren't converted, are walking in the vanity of their mind. And that includes those that present themselves as intelligent. There were a lot of Greeks in Athens at the time that Paul was writing this to the Ephesians. There were a lot of Greeks that were intelligent, really intelligent. And they're studying Plato. They're studying Aristotle. You see the artwork coming out of ancient Greece. I mean, you talk about nudity, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was all nude, wasn't it?
Pretty much.
Did anybody have clothes on? I think anybody did.
Yeah.
But Paul is saying, you know, hey, don't walk as other Gentiles walk in the vanity of their mind, having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that's in them because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling have given themselves over to lasciviousness to work all uncleanness with greediness, but you have not so learned Christ. What Paul is saying there is that the Greeks, the Gentiles, the Gentile world had given themselves over to lasciviousness. I mean, their minds were just shot through with sexual immorality and sexual perversion. And that's the way they framed their minds. Now, will that affect their artwork and their statuary? I'm guessing it did.
Yeah.
And to bring it back seems to me to be, again, going back and walking as other Gentiles walk in the vanity of their minds. There's also, and here's one more point that I think we should draw. I was reviewing Proverbs 7 yesterday, and this stood out to me. There is what is called in Proverbs 7, verse 11, an attire of an harlot. The attire of a harlot. And I think that we as Christians need to think through this a bit. I think everybody knows what the attire of the harlot looks like down at the red light districts in Amsterdam or, you know, wherever.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not telling you to walk down the red light district to pick up on what the attire of a harlot looks like. But it seems to me that anybody with reasonable intelligence should know what it is. Don't you think? I mean,
yeah.
Shouldn't you know? I mean, the attire of a harlot. So the first step to sexual sin for men, I think oftentimes, is when he's taken by the attire of a harlot. And here's Proverbs 7 again. Proverbs 7 is all about how this guy is kind of hanging out. I mean, really is just hanging out. That was one of the problems. He was hanging out at the street corner and came upon this woman. Now listen to what it says. There a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. So there it is right away. Off the top, there it is. She meets this guy with an attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She's loud, rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside. At times the open square, lurking at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him with her enticing speech. She caused him to yield with her flattering lips. She seduced him. Immediately he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till an arrow struck his liver, as a bird hastens to the snare he did not know, it cost him his life. Now, that's one of those severe warnings that comes from the book of Proverbs for those young men who are so easily taken by the attire of the harlot and everything else. And so I guess what I'm saying is let's at least be discerning a concerning dress. I still think it's important. Now, we don't tell people what that looks like. We're hoping that they will love the Lord, their God, with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength, their mind. I don't want to be loving God with my mind for everybody, but hopefully there will be some proper application taken to this. And let's not just give way to the culture. Let's not give way to a culture where 57% of children are born outside of wedlock, up from 4% in the 1940s. And then the final point that I think needs to be brought to bear, and people are going to be asking the question, okay, guys, what are you concluding concerning this question of Dancing with the Stars. We're not going to give you that answer. It's not our approach, is it, Steve? We just want to give some principles and, you know, think it through for yourself.
Yeah. Why are you watching it? You know, that would be a good question to ask. Are you trying to rationalize being able to gaze upon something that is sinful?
Yeah.
And, you know, the same thing with art. You know, do you go to look at this to, and you can call it art, but it's a rationalization for your perversion. And so that you've got to ask those questions, and you got to be honest with yourself. God knows your heart better than you do.
And the final point that I want to make is, you know, over 2,000 years, there has been a resurgence again and again of what we call antinomian Christianity. And that is that Christianity that rejects the laws of God, that doesn't keep the commandments of God. And so as Christians, we need to be aware of this, that even during the Reformation, Steve, there was what was called the Radical Reformation in this town called Munster. And the guy who led it was John of Leiden. Have you ever heard of, or Jan of Leiden? You ever heard of John of Leiden? He led this Munster radical rebellion or radical revolution. And Munster was devoted to polygamy and Marxism, basically. John of Leiden eventually had 16 wives or something. And I think, you know, there was some worse things going on, too. It was just out of control, chaotic craziness. And so, you know, there has been that antinomian type of Christianity. That is, we're saved by grace in order that we can live like the devil. I mean, that's kind of the simple way of putting it. You're saved by grace in order that you might be able to live like the devil. It gives you kind of an excuse for living like the devil, like everybody else does. And so that antinomian form of Christianity is rather common throughout history. And yes, people ask, well, how can somebody use the Jesus talk and the God talk and still play with licentious music and, you know, approve of homosexuality, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, people are confused by this. They hear a lot of Jesus talk. They hear a lot of God talk. But then they see that there's just a lot of antinomian craziness going on. And they're wondering why that is. You know, since the 1970s, it's really interesting. It's been very, very popular in the culture and amongst our political leaders to claim some kind of relationship with a Jesus out there. And this did not happen in the 1800s, but it happened beginning in the 1970s. It became popular for guys like Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama to profess their faith in Jesus. I mean, they did it unashamedly, unabashedly, and yet they would, you know, continue to live like the devil, as in Bill Clinton and what he was doing. It was, you know, that's a very, very common thing from the 70s through the 80s and through the 90s. In fact, back in the 1800s, President Pierce would not have been caught dead referring to an evangelical faith or to Jesus. You know that?
No, I did not know that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, you get into the 1840s and 1850s, John Adams was upset with John Quincy Adams for acknowledging Christ.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the deism and the Unitarianism of the day was just so, you know, so strong that guys like Franklin Pierce would never have been caught dead saying what Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton had confessed about Jesus. But the question is this, is it the real Jesus? I think we need to be knocking the watermelon a little bit, guys, because the real Jesus says, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. And you can't just pick and choose. You can't just kind of create your Gumby Jesus, your plastic Jesus, kind of form your own little Jesus according to the figments of your own imaginations. And, you know, you have these liberal presidents acknowledging Jesus and telling everybody, I think Jesus would have approved of homosexual marriage. I think Jesus would have approved of abortion, you know. And when the minute they start saying stuff like that, you plastic Jesus, Gumby Jesus, Play-Doh Jesus, they're making their own Jesus as they go. Since the 1970s, it's been very, very popular to talk about some kind of a Jesus, but of course not the real one. Jesus warned us of the false Christ. Of course there are going to be false Christs. So it's important for us to ask, are we talking about the true Christ, or are we talking about some kind of fake Christ? In Revelation 14:12, we find that towards the end, those who keep the faith, those that endure, are those who keep the faith of Jesus and the commandments of God. They have respect for the commandments of God, and they maintain the testimony of Jesus. That's an important and there. Okay? Jesus said, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. So again, be on the guard, my friends. Be on the guard. Be on the guard for antinomian Christianity, which really is not the true faith.
Yeah, in my club, one of the things I teach about the rules is that you can approach rules and laws in two different ways. You can either do it like Jesus did or like the Pharisees did. The Pharisees looked at the law and said, how much can I get away with without breaking the law? Jesus looked at it and said, how can I love you and bless you by keeping it?
Amen. Amen.
It's a hard issue.
It sure is. There's no separation there. There's no separation. Yeah. Jesus said, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. He didn't say, just get out there and start keeping my commandments.
Yeah.
He said, you know, love me. Love me. Follow me. Do what I do. All right. Well, that wraps up this edition of the Generations broadcast. And again, friends, I'm encouraging you to discernment. Be discerning. Be discerning when it comes to programs like Dancing with the Stars or any television program or any modern cultural device that seems to be so influential upon the minds of billions and billions of people around the globe today. Grab a copy of my book, The Tattoo Jesus, What the Real Jesus Would Do with Pop Culture. That little book, it's only about 120 pages, but it's a pretty potent little book that brings out the principles and will give you a little bit of a guideline as to how to discern modern cultural devices. So we encourage you to get a copy of The Tattoo Jesus at our website, generations.org or kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.